On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show on a Sunday. What are you doing here on a Sunday, Ron? Well, this is an interview special. Today's show, and only today's show, is all interviews. Experts in all different fields with information and, well, you'll see. It's about an hour long. Sit back, relax. It's our interview special. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new normal show. But today, it's just interviews. Dr. Rosalind Lewis Tompkins joins us now. She's the founder and president of Mothers in Crisis Incorporated. It's a nonprofit organization, and they link families and communities together to provide networks of support and encouragement for families. Sounds like a good thing. Sounds like a good thing to me, Rosalind.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing, especially with hope, because people need it today more than ever.
Yes. Well, we've needed hope for the 4 years previous as well.
Absolutely.
Hope was erased from the vocabulary for a while, unfortunately. But now it's become the top of the list. So that's a nice return. We are seeing a lot of hope, but without connecting with other people in the same situation, you can't appreciate hope, I guess.
Yes, that's one of the things that's so powerful about Mothers in Crisis. We believe in the power of hope and the power of hope connections because, you know, once you become more hopeful, then we have to be able to spread it to others.
Yes, there's no question about it. And, you know, a thread in many of the interviews that I do on this show is when people talk to other people and realize that they're all in the same boat, all of a sudden, it doesn't sound like, you know, why me kind of thing. And it really does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it certainly makes a difference psychologically, which affects you physically. I mean, there's just a whole gamut of repercussions when you don't connect. So I'm glad you're doing something like that. What are you finding to be the most need for connection? What topic? What feeling?
Well, the thing is, what we've been concentrating on as this is the Whole Hope campaign, and one of our main focuses as we are promoting the public awareness of hope. We're mm-hmm. public advocates, and I'm a hopeologist, so that's my moniker.
Hopeologist, yeah.
Yes. And as we have been designating this whole movement since 2018, when we got the first ever National Month of Hope, in April, that we just finished celebrating again this year, and also all throughout the year, what I see the challenges for people, first of all, to begin to think hope, because it's so easy just to have pessimistic thoughts and to just kind of look at things as they are and just believe that it's going to always be that way. So I think that's the main focus, is to help people throughout the year to become more hopeful.
I understand that you have some history in your own life that kind of led you on this journey to the path of opening this up for everybody. Could you tell me about that?
Oh, yes, I'd love to. How I became what I call the hopeologist is because of my own journey that I went through, and I call it the hellhole of addiction. For 12 years, 12 of my young years of my life, starting at the age of 12. But I've been clean now for 34 years and counting. And I guess I could just to sum it all up, as I talk about in my book, As Long As There's Breath in Your Body, There's Still Hope. The power of hope is what helped to bring me through and then helped me to start Mothers in Crisis and be able to help thousands of others, families that were in crises.
Yeah.
And now where our focus is not just drug and alcohol addiction, because as you know, everyone needs hope.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's for sure. That is for sure. Without hope, what's the point? And there is a point. So that can be destitution or rainbows. It really makes a difference, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, 34 years ago, that's like you never had a problem. I mean, it really is. I mean, that's like, no, I know, that's 34 years ago. That's another life.
Well, it's certainly another life, but I found that so many people, you know, unfortunately, are still in the throes mm-hmm. of addiction and, mm-hmm. and so many different hopeless situations that, you know, I can't afford to not share it and talk about it.
Sure.
Because it helps me to be able to relate and to let people know that, hey, no, I can understand. You can make it no matter what's going on. There is hope.
Yes.
And that's the whole message, to be able to help people to see that so they don't make a permanent decision based upon a temporary situation.
That's
and
right.
That is when people commit suicide.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, it goes further than if I can do it, you can do it. The fact is, it can be done. And
yes.
that's where the hope comes in. It's interesting to me that a lot of people approach this from a religious aspect. And I don't know if you do or you don't personally, but I'm not seeing that that's really entering into this at all. This seems to be an inner spirit kind of reality. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's good because that's something everybody can get on board with. That, you know,
oh, just, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's definitely non-sectarian. Right. We all need hope mm-hmm. according to the survival laws of three that's often quoted. Mm-hmm. You can only live 3 seconds without hope. So it's not political, and it's, you know, it's not based upon a certain, you know, religion. I mean, I know I have my own personal
sure.
beliefs, but everyone needs hope.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. Yeah. And what gives you hope is people around you that show that there is hope, and that's what you're doing here with this particular organization. How can people get in touch, and what happens when they do?
Well, we have a major campaign going on right now called the 10,000 Balls for Hope and Essay Contest.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out about that by going to makeahopeconnection.com. And we're spreading hope, and we're giving out these stress balls of hope. And we are also allowing people to write essays and submit them about how their lives have become more hopeful. So go to makeahopeconnection.com and join us in this movement and become one of those that are hope givers.
Very good. Okay. They're on their way. I think they're on their way. It's makeahopeconnection.com.
Yes.
And great talking to you. It's good. You spread the hope, and that's a good thing to do. Appreciate it. Yvette Rios joins us now. She's host of the Emmy-nominated show, Recipe Rehab. She's a cook, interior designer. She built the Statue of Liberty.
Wait a second.
Oh, okay. Maybe that. All right. All right. So one thing you didn't do. Okay. All right. Welcome to the program. We're talking about, hey, it's springtime. I've noticed that. And I'm looking to your advice here. You know, all through the past year, people have been trying to redecorate and move furniture around and, you know, trying to make their home a little bit more interesting day after day. We're starting to now be able to move around a little bit, but that spring kind of change things up is still with us, isn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, we've realized that our homes need to serve a lot of purposes for us.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just a place for us to sleep, which is what, you know, a lot of people used it for, and, you know, to spend the weekends together. But now we've got to have it, you know, have our offices and our home gym
yeah.
and,
yeah.
you know, all and even like daycare for the kids or school for the kids. So it's really like forced us to really rethink how we use our space. And I think that's inspired many of us to redecorate and renovate our homes and all that good stuff. In fact, like 58% of Americans during this time have redecorated and renovated their homes. So a vast majority of us.
Yes, and now we can actually do it with a little bit more choice, go out and look at things and get some ideas. But a lot of people are still concerned about the cost of doing what you're talking about. Does it have to be that way?
Well, you know, I think anytime, you know, anything that has to do with your home is obviously always an investment. And, you know, you have to assess whether or not things are worth it. And personally, I've found that it's been a challenge to find, like, contractors and people to do work just because it's been such a boom in just, you know, people prioritizing their homes a little bit more than usual.
True.
But one way that you can really save money in doing these upgrades and refreshing your space is by using a resale app like OfferUp, because you're able to save so much by buying things already used. I mean, occasionally there'll be new things as well, but, you know, 35% of Americans actually purchased home products on resale apps like OfferUp last year. So it is a growing community of people. You can really save money. You can also, you know, find things that are a little bit more unusual, maybe one-of-a-kind things, vintage pieces that you would have a challenge, you know, going and getting at a store.
I see.
And the other thing that's made it easier is that, you know, I don't know if you've had this issue, but everything is delayed. Like, if you go into a big box store and you go to try to buy something that they have on display, I mean, sometimes it's like 6 to 12 weeks, you know, to be able to get that. The supply chain issues have been really challenging. So by using, you know, OfferUp, you're actually able to get things, you know, faster than you would right now going and buying them new.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. What else can I do with my home here?
Well, I'd love to see it so I can give you some real hands-on advice. But you know, you really can find some really great things. And, you know, if you actually have a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of us are really blessed to have more than we actually need.
Yeah.
It can be a great money maker to, you know, sell items that you're not using or, you know, that, that you, you know, you don't want anymore. And there, I've got some ideas, you know, and some tips if you are thinking of selling things that you may have to make sure that you're, you know, getting the most money that you can for your items.
No, there's no question about it. I mean, during the past year, I have been through my house and I've noticed there are things I haven't seen in 10, 15 years. Why do I have them? What can I do with them? And this is a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of people are seeing, you know, seeing the opportunity to make some money. I mean, I think that one way to do that, one way to find things that people want to buy is to really think about what are people shopping for now. I mean, you're not necessarily going to have a ton of luck selling, you know, snow boots this time of year, but if you have a grill that you're not using or outdoor furniture or, you know, pool toys, you know, you can sell all of that stuff now. That's the kind of thing that people are really looking for. And then you want to make sure that you, you know, take clear photos, that you write a really thorough description. You know, people want to understand what the condition is. And, you know, like I said about the photos, you can include up to 12 photos on OfferUp. So you can really show, like, lots of detailed pictures to let people know if it's got a scratch or it's cracked or whatever. And then you want to think about, like, how to price the item. So take a look at similar pieces and try to kind of figure out what they're charging and make sure you price things like kind of on par with what other things in the market are priced for. And then, like I said, you just want to think about things that are seasonal because that's what's really hot and that's what's going to sell.
This is like a public yard sale kind of thing on a higher level.
Absolutely. And, I mean, yard sales are fantastic, but this opens you up to, you know, buyers all over the country because you can actually, if it's a smaller item, I mean, you're going to have a little bit of difficulty, you know, shipping a cast iron tub, but you can actually ship all of your items to, you know, 48 contiguous states through OfferUp. So that also opens you up to a lot more people by offering shipping.
Okay. So all the process of doing this is all on the OfferUp website, I would assume.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Very good. All right. Now, is there anything that you need that I have here? Can you use like a piece of china, a plate or something?
I'm a little bit of a pack rat, so I will probably take anything that you have to give. But no, I really see the potential in just about everything, so it's hard for me to let go.
But it's
also much better to sell things than it is to, you know, throw them away or
yeah.
or you know what I mean. So yeah. This is a way better option.
Absolutely. Well, some things you can give away, but at the same time, some of those are really valuable, and it goes into a different category. And not even really valuable, something that someone else could get at a fair price. Excellent.
Yes.
So one more time, that website, please.
It is offerup.com.
Excellent. Hey, great talking to you. I didn't know about this, so I learned something today. Appreciate it.
Yay, excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Yvette. Dr. Hillary Norton joins us. She's a rheumatologist, and Jill is a patient, and we're going to tell you what's going on here, what you have in common. Dr. Norton, let me start with you here. You're a rheumatologist, and you have another situation going on, don't you?
I do. I have something called AS, which is part of this spectrum of disease that we're calling axSpA. So there is non-radiographic axSpA, meaning it doesn't show up on x-ray, and then AS, meaning that x-ray damage does show up. And what these are, this is an inflammatory chronic form of back pain. It's very underdiagnosed. We think that there are at least 1.7 million people living with this. But many people don't know they have it. So Jill and I are working on behalf of Novartis to help raise awareness for this disease. And that's why we are so passionate about this campaign, Monster Pain in the AS, because we are both patients.
Sure. Yeah, Jill, you're also you're a patient, and you have the non-version of it?
Correct. Okay. I have non-radiographic AS.
I think everybody would be asking, well, I have back pain every once in a while. Is this the beginning of it? Do I have it? The chronic back pain is rather normal if you're an athlete or if you become a senior. So how do we differentiate?
Yeah, so most people who have back pain are going to have mechanical back pain, meaning that that's coming from the joints, the discs, the soft tissue that may radiate. But inflammatory back pain is different. This pain tends to be worse at rest. So people often have pain at night. It's often worse first thing in the morning, and it's actually better with activity.
Well, that's still a lot of people would be saying, hey, that's still me. So would one go to their general practitioner, or do we go right to a specialist if we feel this is a possibility?
A rheumatologist is who you really want to see if you think that this may be inflammatory back pain. There is a simple 3-minute quiz at monsterpaininthes.com that can help people to differentiate whether this is inflammatory or mechanical back pain. And if it is determined that this is inflammatory, the quiz can actually help connect you with a rheumatologist. Okay.
How does this manifest itself into one's life? Is it from an injury? Is it hereditary, etc.?
So people have a genetic predisposition for this. There may be a family history, or that family history may not be known, but it is not from an injury. This comes on generally when people are in their 20s, sometimes even earlier. It comes on gradually, and it never goes away. So even though the symptoms may come and go, this is chronic, and it never truly resolves.
Jill, was that your experience coming on around that age time?
Yeah, so I had symptoms of unexplained back pain and some inflammatory things for many years, really starting as a teenager. And then for me, it really became severe after I actually had a slip on the ice and injured my back and neck. Really, things never resolved after that. And everyone kept, I saw multiple providers. Things weren't resolving. Right. I saw an orthopedist, physical therapy. And as the pain became more severe, I was finally referred to a rheumatologist, and she quickly made the diagnosis after doing a workup. And leading up to it is exhausting, because I think there are a lot of people out there with unexplained back pain, and my experience really was the same. A lot of really trying to pinpoint what's going on. And I was relieved and felt great when I finally understood where the back pain was coming from.
Yeah. It's not that people are misdiagnosing. It's a complicated situation where the diagnoses may not come until many steps have been achieved, which is, I assume, frustrating. I get that. Yeah. So one might say, what do you do about it?
Well, we can manage this disease well. So this is where you want to work with your rheumatologist, because there's no one-size-fits-all treatment plan for axSpA. So your rheumatologist is going to work with you on a number of things. And I tell my patients to stay active, to eat a healthy diet, and there's no one specific diet for axSpA. This is going to be different for everybody. Uh-huh. To not smoke, because we know that smoking makes AS or axSpA worse.
Right.
And then to work on treatment options with your rheumatologist.
Interesting. Doctor, did you become a rheumatologist before the condition for yourself, or did this come on after you were a rheumatologist? That's kind of interesting.
I became a rheumatologist really because of my AS diagnosis. There's no better reason to have something.
It's almost like self-treatment.
I understand my patients. You can't learn this from a textbook. There's nothing like living with a disease to understand it.
Yeah, I would say that I would be quite comfortable with a physician that really understood. That's a major component. Yeah, good. Well, okay. So seek it out. If it's not going away and your doctors just aren't doing it for you, don't stop there. Keep going. And I guess that's why you're doing this time with us, to spread the word that it this is a consideration.
Absolutely. We know there are many undiagnosed patients out there, and so Jill and I want to help spread the word and identify people. So if you think this is you, just check out monsterpaininthas.com and take the quiz.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one more question before we part, because there are a lot of people with back pain who have even been through some surgeries and it still hasn't resolved. So this is a possibility. Is this an everyday occurrence as far as the pain is concerned, or is it something that kicks up every once in a while and just there's no end to that situation?
You know, it can start in the beginning where it comes and goes, but as the disease progresses, it really becomes an everyday occurrence, and specifically an every night occurrence. So this back pain can get very severe at night, in the second half of the night, and early in the morning.
Wow. Well, I guess there comes a point where I guess you have no choice but to do something about it, because it just becomes paramount. So, I guess one would know if how much of a concern that would be. All right. Where do we go for more information about this? I know people would want to do that.
Yes, you can visit monsterpaininthas.com and take the quiz, and that will get you connected to a rheumatologist if needed.
Could you spell that website, please?
Sure, it's Monster Pain in the AS, as in ankylosing spondylitis.
Well, yes, that too. It's a catchy little phrase that you've come up with. Certainly.
Well, it's a monster of a disease.
Yeah, and it is what you claim it is. So, but it's something that people will remember, and that's actually what works on that. All right. Thank you so much for the time to the both of you, and best to you. Thank you. Rowdy Gaines is here. He's a 3-time Olympic gold medalist, and we're talking about healthy pools, a fitting conversation under these circumstances. Rowdy, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Ron. Good to be with you, buddy.
Hey, these are questions that everybody's asking. Why not go to somebody that knows the water rather well? So that's what we're doing. Yeah, it's time to get back to somewhat normal. It's time to get into the pool. Is it the same as every other year, or what are we looking for here? First, let's start where where perhaps not everybody is comfortable enough to go jumping in the pool right now. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a different time of year than it was 2 years ago. Last year was, you know, crazy. But
yes.
I think as the weather gets warmer, and especially as vaccinations surge,
yes,
Ron, I think more public pools will start to reopen. And I think Americans, I think we're all cautiously optimistic about going back to the pool. And I think as long as most pool operators will follow those safety protocols, I think it's time to get back in the pool. I really do. Most Americans really want to make that happen this year versus last year. And I think obviously last year, but look, a year ago, almost all pools were closed. So a lot more will open, a lot more people will go to the beach and have a lot more fun.
Well, there's no question that by the time, just a month from now, I would assume that just about all restrictions might be lifted in almost all states. So that won't be a restriction anymore. It will be more of a personal choice as to how comfortable one would be. I know outdoor swimming for me might be a bit more comfortable but from indoor, but at the same time, not necessarily everything is probably okay. We all think of swimming as a sport where you exhale a lot, and I guess that would be the concern.
Well, I think, you know, listen, this is not according to me, Ron. This
right.
is according to the CDC.
Yes.
There's no evidence, zero evidence that COVID-19 can be spread to people through water.
Right.
So when I say water, I'm talking about properly chlorinated water, because it actually is just the opposite. It kills the virus.
Correct.
So I think the most important thing is to remember is that most Americans, just over 50% in this survey that Healthy Pools did, they wanted limited capacity above anything else.
Right.
It's not so much being in the water, it's just being around big crowds, you know? But while you're in the water and you're still socially distanced, now, if you're in a pool and there's 600 people in a 25-yard pool, there's probably causes for concern. But as you know, as you go to pools this summer, just like you have every other summer, you know, you're swimming on your own and you're splashing around and you're with your buddies and you feel good about things. And I don't think that's going to change. I think most pool operators understand that this year they'll be more diligent in cleaning procedures and making sure everybody will enjoy the water.
Yeah. Well, if you're not sure about any of that, get your vaccines, and then you don't have to even consider that. So, you know, you're good if you
exactly
do that.
Exactly right. Go get, absolutely. Yeah. Go get vaccinated and understand that communication is a key. Those pool operators, I think, will certainly communicate the expectations that everybody needs to have. Listen, I think it's going to be a great summer of swimming. I think we're going to get back to enjoying the water and having that healthy respect for being in and around the water.
Yeah.
The most important thing is for parents of small children, especially, put your children in swim lessons.
Yes.
Because that's a real key for me, is literally put your child in swim lessons, because it's been proven swim lessons reduce the risk of drowning by about 90%.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, you know, I don't go in a pool if there's 100 people in it anyway. I never did. Why would I want to? So it's okay. And if they have...
I think most people understand that. When it's real crowded, they're not getting in the water anyway.
Of course not.
But I think most people are smart enough this summer to understand exactly what to expect and how to do it again. I go back to what I said at the very beginning. Let's all be cautiously optimistic about it.
Yeah.
But boy, you know what? And you know this, Ron. I mean, everybody loves the water. I love swimming. I swim every day. I swim 6 days a week, and I love it. I love being in and around water. I love making sure that kids learn how to swim.
Yeah.
And I think that's the foundation I work for now, Step Into Swim, part of the Pool and Hot Tub Alliance. Mm-hmm. That's something that we really are trying to make sure we get across to families across the country.
Okay. Let's just for a second go to the hot tub thing. Because that's different than a pool, to be honest with you. It's just a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that deal? Although, again, if you're vaccinated, don't worry about it anymore. You know, right?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. That point is true. Yeah. But I think hot tubs are no different from swimming pools. Okay. You know, as long as they're properly coordinated, they're fine.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
It's no different. It actually feels better to jump in a hot tub, especially if you've been in a cold pool. But, you know, again, it's really, I a lot of drownings happen in hot tubs. And for me, what's more important is making sure that you never allow a child to swim alone or be near a hot tub by themselves. Always have that water watcher.
Absolutely.
And I know I'm supposed to talk about COVID, and that's something that's obviously critical. But for me, swimming lessons and making sure your child is safe in and around water, especially after a year where we haven't been around water, is really even more important to me.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%. I think we can start moving away from the COVID conversations pretty soon, if not now, and start talking about the generals of staying safe and healthy in different environments. And that's where swimming lessons come in, my God. So, I think we can start focusing on the important things. Not that COVID wasn't important.
Absolutely. Water. Water quality is critical, no doubt about it. We should always keep an eye on that. But, you know, that's what the Pool and Hot Tub Alliance does. We have that education and government advocacy and certification all across the country where we're really elevating the industry to make sure they're doing things right.
Good, good. Hey, pleasure speaking to you. What else are you doing these days?
You too, buddy.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm getting ready to call my I'm getting ready to call my 8th Olympics in Tokyo. Tokyo here in about 2 months.
Give me a couple of websites, not pornographic, normal.
Sure.
Give me some.
Healthy.
Go
on. Healthypools.org will give you a lot more information about the survey we did. PHTA.org will give you information about our Pool and Hot Tub Alliance. And StepIntoSwim.org will give you a lot of information about making sure you keep your child safe in and around water.
Good. Lindsay Mindick joins us now. She's the YMCA, the water safety expert. And thank you for being with us today. I actually have many questions for you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Well, as people get back to normal things, we can go swimming in pools again and not have to, you know. But at the same time, water safety is quite important. And I know at the YMCA, that's on the top of their list of concerns.
Yes, absolutely. At the Y, we feel that we are America's swim instructor, right? And our whole goal is to keep kids and families safer on water.
No question about it. When someone wants to swim in a pool, et cetera, obviously they should know how to swim. But, I mean, are there swimming lessons that are also available?
Yeah. Obviously, at the Y, we have lots of pools across the country. And so we have swimming lessons that are available for children starting at the age of 6 months all the way through adults. Swimming lessons are one of the most important things that we can do to reduce drowning, because swimming lessons themselves can reduce the drowning rate by 88%.
Yeah. Now, of course, at one of the facilities, there's supervision and rules and regulations so that we all stay safe. But not everybody goes to a YMCA pool. Some people have pools at their houses, and gets a little bit more lax there, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned at the Y, we really want to make sure that we're keeping our pools safe. And so we've actually teamed up with Leslie's this summer, America's leader in all things pool, to really help educate people out there about what they can do to keep their backyard pool area safe and secure. And so, as you mentioned, one of those important things is to ensure that your pool has rules. Each home pool really needs a basic set of rules. Also, children who can't swim, and I would also say adults, should wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket.
Yes.
And then finally, it's really important to have those layers of protection. So as I mentioned, swimming lessons, really great layer of protection. But in addition, making sure that your pool has a fence around it, that you have a pool safety cover, there are alarms, you have those safety, the safety equipment, and then finally that you have healthy pool water. Healthy pool water is really important for the safety of your family and friends when they come visit you. And at Leslie's, you can bring in a water sample and they'll test it for free and give you a treatment plan too.
That's really important because water can it's not a running river. It's not a replenished river or ocean. It's like standing water, yeah. And that's where things breed if you don't put in the proper amounts of chemicals and you don't clean them. That is a responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, having a backyard pool as a full homeowner, it's a really big responsibility. And post-pandemic, actually, there has been a very large increase in people who have backyard pools, which really, really is the impetus for really needing to drive the information home that we need to think about keeping our backyard pools and our backyard safe for children and families.
Yeah. In many parts of the country right now, the weather is warmer than it usually is. Which isn't great, but I like the summer at the proper time, but it's getting very warm and people are jumping into pools that haven't necessarily been completely treated yet. And that's always a great concern of mine because in really hot weather, your pool's not ready to swim in, you're going to jump in. And I don't know how good that is.
Right. Again, properly balanced and with proper chemical and chlorine balance is really important to ensure that you have a safe environment.
Yeah. What other things should we be doing that perhaps we're not doing properly here?
Yeah. So again, you know, from a few safety tips, right? We want to make sure that children are always supervised when they're near the water. Mm-hmm. So 88% of drownings happen when children are under some form of supervision.
Yep.
But a recent survey revealed that 67% of adults think drownings happen while unsupervised. And so to help with this, we can designate what's called a water watcher, right? So somebody is actively watching the water. And then also teaching children that they always need to ask permission before they enter any body of water, like a bathtub, a pool, even a small stream behind their house.
Yeah.
And then a second really important thing is to make sure that all adults become CPR certified. You never know when an accident or injury is going to happen, and having that education and knowledge really can save a life.
That's a great, I mean, we teach everything else in school, don't we? But we don't teach how to save people's lives in some type of immediate emergency trauma. I don't think they teach that in the classroom, but perhaps they should. Yeah.
I would 100% agree.
Yeah. The other is that kids, you know, kids are kids, and I think they should understand that water is not like running around on grass in a backyard. I mean, there can be some dangers involved. And when kids get a little too frisky and play and run around with water, I get a little squeezy about that.
Yeah, you know, water is one of the best environments that we can exercise in, recreate in, but it comes with risk, right?
Yes.
And so we need to do everything we can within our communities to make sure that we keep our water areas safe.
Yes.
And, you know, as I mentioned, these layers of protection are so important, right? Fencing and teaching kids to swim, as well as ensuring that kids know and can ask permission before going near the water. It's really paramount to keep our community safe.
There's something else that I found, Lindsay, is that in backyard pools, people play music really loud, you know, in order to create the summer loud music environment. But I think that's kind of dangerous because then you can't hear what's going on with the kids. I mean, you want to be able to hear them playing and moving and talking. If you drown them out, they could drown and you wouldn't even know it.
Right. I mean, we have backyard pools because we enjoy being in the water in the summer and inviting friends over. And we want to keep that, right? But we also want to make sure that we're keeping that environment safe. So having that water watcher, I mean, a dedicated person who can watch those children at all times, and that person isn't distracted, right? They are not actively engaged in conversation. They're not partaking in any of the beverages, right, going on. And really zoning in to make sure that they're keeping those kids safe is most important.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say something right off. I mean, you don't need the expense of a pool and the expense of keeping up a pool in your backyard because that's an expensive venture. Go to the YMCA, get a membership, and go down to their pool where we can have a good time and you don't have to worry about that much. That's my advice.
Yeah, well, I mean, backyard pools are fun, right?
Yeah, they're expensive stuff.
You're taking care of them and you're making sure that people and family are enjoying them safely.
All right. I guess so.
You can do it.
I had a pool once and it nearly bankrupted me. Anyway, but that's my opinion. Okay, Lindsay, how do we get more information about this?
Yeah, so for more information on swimming lessons, you can go to YMCA. You can actually find in more information at your local YMCA, or you can go to ymca.net/water safety. And to find more information about how you can keep your backyard pool safe, you can go to your local Leslie store or lesliespool.com.
Very good. Hey, thanks for the conversation today. Tanya Castaneda joins us. She's a sustainability ambassador with Republic Services. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Ron. Happy to be here.
Well, okay, we're talking about composting. I don't think they teach that in school anymore, so we don't know exactly what it is. I've heard the term. I see it with cows and things like that. But how do I get involved with compost? Do I do composting and I'm not aware of it? Do you do composting?
Well, those are great questions. Composting is simply nature's way of recycling organics. It happens in nature, and we can recreate that for our own home garden to get all of those wonderful benefits. So in nature, organic waste like food scraps and yard trimmings become nutrients for our ecosystem, and they're great for your home garden. By repurposing all of that organic waste, you can reduce your environmental impact and you can grow great tomatoes.
Now, I'm assuming that as Republic Services, you pick up a lot of things. And are we saying this because we're wasting what could be compost, we're just throwing it away?
Absolutely. So according to the EPA, yard waste and food waste make up about 30% of what is sent to landfills. So when you compost your food and yard waste, it helps reduce emissions by diverting these items from landfills. When they go to landfills, unfortunately, they create methane, which is a greenhouse gas, and that's also air pollution. So if all of us were to do a little of our part, not only could we help the environment, we can help our own home garden, and we can even help our wallet.
Okay. Now, it says that some of these items that you can just throw into your garden, apparently, coffee grounds, fruits and vegetables, eggshells, tea bags, nutshells.
You got it. Exactly. So all of these great materials go through a process. So composting is a process where food scraps decompose naturally. And during that process, it pretty much heats up, it cooks itself, and it turns into free fertilizer that's just as good, if not better, than store-bought compost. It's a great way to bring nutrients to your garden without any chemicals. So how you get started is you collect all of your food scraps in a small container in your kitchen while you're cooking just like normal. You mentioned all the great items like coffee grounds, fruits and vegetable peels, eggshells, tea bags, and nutshells. Stay away from meats, fats, and dairy products. Once you've collected all of those items, normally known as wet materials, mix in some dry materials like dead leaves, dirty paper bags, or even paper egg cartons, and that helps create a balanced compost pile. Put it in your compost bin outside, and nature does the rest of the work.
So I don't have to put it into my mixer or anything, just put it in the ground.
You could put it in the ground. You could buy a container that actually has a wheel that turns it for you. Hmm. You can do it yourself and have a chicken wire about 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet. Put all these materials in there. Hmm. You want to occasionally stir it, mix it up maybe once a week because that distributes the heat. Hmm. And, a little 30 days, you could have fertilizer for your home garden.
So if I use coffee grounds to grow tomatoes, my tomatoes won't taste like coffee?
You'd have to give it a try. It really won't taste like coffee, but all of these nutrients bring phosphorus, calcium. It's a great way to replenish your soil without chemical fertilizers. It's an organic solution. But I did hear if you plant basil next to your tomatoes, it actually might make your tomatoes more flavorful. So
yeah.
There's some tips on gardening there.
Well, there you go. Now, what if you don't have a backyard or a garden and you live in an apartment? What
That's
then?
That's totally okay. Mm. Yeah, just start small. You do not need a big yard. In fact, there's different types of bin sizes. There's even worm composting where you can put in a dark area, vermicomposting. Mm. So there's a variety of methods. You can visit republicservices.com/sustainability to learn a lot more about composting and how to reduce your environmental footprint.
So when I'm passing cow pastures and I'm smelling manure, excuse the topic, is that composting going on over there? Why are they selling manure? Is that for composting or not?
There's different types of methods the agriculture industry uses to replenish the soil. Mm-hmm. That could be one method. For your at-home garden, we recommend don't putting any type of animal waste in there.
Okay.
Don't put any meats. Don't put any fats or dairy products, because those types of things could potentially attract pests. If you just stick with your vegetables and your leaves, it should not smell. If you have a good 50-50 mixture of the dry and the wet items,
gotcha.
It should actually smell like a forest, if anything. It actually smells pretty good. Yep.
So that seems like it's like natural replenishment of resources. In other words, you grow vegetables, they go bad at a point. Instead of throwing them out, you take them, use them as compost, and it regenerates all over again.
It really does. Nature has it figured out, and all we need to do is let nature do the work.
If only people could figure that out, but we have to do the composting 101. All right, one more time.
We sure do.
We do. One more time, that website.
republicservices.com/sustainability.
Wonderful. Pleasure speaking to you.
Very speaking with you, Ron. Good luck with your tomatoes.
Nina Montianimo is here. She is a Canadian ecologist and internationally published novelist of science fiction and fantasy. And thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Ron.
We're talking about water. Something that I think is, water and air are the two things that I think I should be talking about all the time.
I agree. Yeah. I totally agree.
The fascination with the subject matter, I assume, is because you're an ecologist.
It is. I'm actually a limnologist. That's somebody who studies fresh water, so I'm a specialized ecologist, if you will.
Wow. And somehow this is translated into a novel?
It has. Into actually a couple of books.
Uh-huh.
I also write short stories, so for a while I've been writing eco-fiction. I guess that's a genre that's out there right now. Eco-lit, sci-fi, climate fiction, that sort of thing.
Oh. Okay, well, it's scary without the fiction. So I can't imagine actually it's interesting, seriously, because it's relatable. I mean, everybody should be able to relate to this situation, and therefore a lot of scenarios can come out of it, I would suppose.
That's so true. It's germane to our daily life, right? Mm-hmm. We depend on these things. We depend on water on a daily basis, but also on a larger basis, which we might not always think. We breathe water. We live on a planet that requires water to do everything that it does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, climate change, in fact, is a water phenomenon. So on an indirect basis, we're living basically on a water planet.
Yeah. Yes, and it's the only one that's around, and we have to deal with what we have, and
yep,
that's what's important. And I know that in both what you do professionally and well, your novelist professionally as well, that water can become not only a crisis but an apocalypse. I think is how you phrase that.
Yeah, well, the way that this particular book, A Diary on the Edge of Water, takes us through a kind of a water journey into an apocalypse, essentially. I guess you could call it a cautionary dystopian tale.
Yes.
But it starts off in the present day, well, in the near future. So it's framed in two ways. It actually begins in the future with an evolved blue being, an evolved human, who is in a dying boreal forest of the north, and she discovers the diary of a limnologist, an ecologist, not me, who's been keeping, you know, who's been journaling through the near future. So the diary portion of the book takes place from the 2040s to the 2060s, more or less. And it's this diary of this limnologist as things are happening, and it's happening quite quickly at that point, if you can imagine.
Yes.
With climate change and water phenomena. Essentially, the book chronicles the journey of actually four generations of women. And this blue being is, in fact, a generation down. So she's discovered the diary of one of her ancestors, basically. So it's all connected.
Wow. What is the is there a target age group on this, or is it for everybody?
Yeah, it's basically for everybody, but I think primarily adult, young adult, certainly adults. It's very readable. It's most of it is in the form of a diary, so that's, you know, little entries by a person writing their thoughts and stuff. But because she's a scientist, she's kind of an over the top type person. She's a recluse, and she doesn't really communicate that well with people. But she communicates really well with science. So every entry has a quote from some textbook that she knows, a limnology textbook or some other work on water. And then that quote relates to an event that's happened with her. So she's analyzing these things, and she's writing about life, mundane life, but it comes across rather... I don't know rather compellingly, right? It's like, for us, it's like reading someone's memoir, which is what it is.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's interesting because fiction is taking what can be there and then giving it scenarios.
Yes.
And that's what you're doing, as opposed to creating something that isn't there. This is really here.
Yeah, exactly. And I did that on purpose.
Yeah.
As a novelist, it's always good to do these things on purpose.
Sure, everything is good that way.
So that was the effect, is to create this sense of reality that you're actually reading the real world. And it brings in a sense of urgency, but also a sense of connection. You know, stories that are based on real life, we watch movies and stuff, and they say at the back, you know, based on someone's real story or real life story, and that brings a certain connection to for us.
Yeah.
Makes it that much more real.
Yeah, it sure does. Are you working on another book already? This is a series, right?
It might well be. The next book is, a lot of people are hoping to read more about the blue water being from the beginning and the end of the book. She frames the story. She frames the diary.
Yeah.
But in fact, my next book is about some of the other characters that are introduced in that story. There's so much more to talk about. But it's not a diary. It's more of a thriller. That's what I write mostly, science fiction thrillers.
Yeah. Well, the diary seems to make it more personalized and makes the character stronger. Yeah.
Definitely.
It's interesting with a lot of books where characters are developed from existing characters within a previous book, eventually it comes back to the last chapter is usually what the first chapter should have been, where how this all really started. I hope you don't do that.
No, I'm not doing that at all.
I find that very annoying. I find that annoying. Like, why didn't you do that to begin with?
Okay, thanks for the hint.
I'm just saying. Strong characters are very interesting because they at a point, and I'm sure you will tell me this is the case, at a point they seem to write the stories themselves, where you're just kind of sitting there kind of just organizing like an orchestra leader with a baton, but the characters take their own routes.
Yep. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, the oboe player, you got to watch that one.
Yeah, the oboe player. Yeah. Right. You got to point at the oboe player until they... Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Right. You don't
they
say
like
anything.
To do their own thing.
Right. You don't say anything. You just point like, okay. All right.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, as a writer, mm-hmm. and it does take a certain element of confidence.
Yeah.
You know, as a writer, though, when that happens, just go with it.
Yeah.
It's so real. That simply means that you have created the world of sufficient substance that the characters fit and take over the story.
Interesting. The book's available now. It's been released.
Yep, it's been out for a little while. It's out with Inanna Publications. You can get it through the publisher themselves in Toronto. They have a wonderful website. You can also get it on Amazon, Kobo, any major bookstore, in fact, is carrying this this book.
It's a diary in the age of water. How do people follow you and your writings and your stuff?
I am all over the internet.
Uh-oh.
And luckily, as you noticed, I have a unique name, a fairly unique name. Uh-huh. So if you Google me, you'll find me everywhere. But basically on Facebook, my name, The Alien Next Door. I have several blogs, The Meaning of Water.
Yes.
And my own name. I do a lot of, I'm basically a writing coach, and I teach writing at University of Toronto.
Cool.
So
cool.
I have a coaching site.
Wow.
And a site. NinaMontiano.ca, NinaMontiano.me. You can find me there.
All right. Let me just spell your last name for those that may not know. It's MUNTEANU.
Yes, that's great. Thanks for thinking of that.
Well, you know, some people
can't find me on Google if you can't spell me right.
Yeah. I have audience members that have trouble with Smith, so.
You're kidding.
No, probably not. I just insulted my audience. Oh, my God, that wasn't right. All right.
Okay. Nina, well, you're very smart.
Thank you. Nina, thanks so much for your time and talking about the book, and I hope people take advantage of it. Thank you so much. Well, hope you enjoyed the program. See you tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.